With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to today's Freeman Report. It is Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And I want to start off today's show by saying how great TNT is at the moment. I tuned in to Sonia Poulton's show this morning for the first time in a while. And I have to say how refreshing it is to have a live breakfast show in the UK that isn't filled with legacy media guff and propaganda. Sonia's interview with Mark Atwood this morning about the importance of repetition in terms of waking people up, I thought was absolutely brilliant. It highlighted why it is so important that we keep on talking about what has happened over the past 4 years. Now, I don't get a lot of time at that time in the morning to listen to TNT, as I'm normally preparing for my show. But I think I might just slip on some headphones when I'm walking the dog in the future, because I really enjoyed the show this morning. I do, however, listen to the last hour of Rick's show every day, as this is when I'm doing the three S's, you know, shave, shower, and, well, I'll leave it to you to guess the last one. But I have to say, Rick is also a fantastic host. As I said, I think we're incredibly lucky in the UK to have a station that features live content throughout the day, offering a different perspective on things. Not everybody has got that. I talk about this with my friends in Ireland quite regularly, and they don't have a live show that goes throughout the day talking about things in, you know, a credible way, but offering a different perspective. They, of course, have a couple of podcasts, but we are incredibly lucky in the UK. And also, let's not forget our other great hosts. We've got David Curtin, Johnny Vedmore, and a whole host of other great hosts here on TNT. And I've also got a great show lined up for you today. As in the first hour of the Freeman Report, today I'll be discussing the situation with fluoride in our drinking water. Is it currently being added to our water? And if so, which parts of the UK are having fluoride added to the water? What is the impact on our health? And I guess most importantly, what can we do about it? Now, this is an issue that I think about a lot, although with so many things to worry about, I have to admit that I don't really know a lot about it. I'm not even sure if fluoride is currently being added to the water in my local area, which I have to say, if I find out today that it is, that will concern me. It really will concern me if it's being put in our water. I have been wondering for some time whether I should invest in water filtration, but is that really necessary? And if I do, what are the best and most affordable solutions? Because I have had a look, I've done a little bit of research, and a lot of them seem to be quite expensive. So do I need to do that? And if so, which is the best solution to go with? After that important discussion, I'll be taking a look at the conclusions from the CAS review of gender identity services for children and young people that was published today in the UK. Now, I'll start this conversation by saying that I do actually feel quite positive at the moment about the direction of debate on gender identity in the UK. Yes, some of the things that have been allowed to happen and continue to happen to children and young people in the UK are awful. But, and this is a big but, unlike America, the UK does seem to be heading in the right direction, both in terms of recognition of the harm that's already been done and the need for an evidence-based approach to the care and services for children. We should not and must not allow ideology to drive services and care for children and young people. And I will even go further than the review's remit, because it didn't look at education in schools. And I will say that the teaching of gender ideology to say that it's normal in schools should now be banned. No more alphabet flags, no more celebration of Pride Month, and no more teaching that trans is even a thing, because it isn't. Just as Billboard Chris said last week on this show, transitioning is something that you do. It does not exist as a standalone thing. There is no scientific evidence to suggest that we have lots of different genders. It is pure ideology that has no place being pushed in schools on children. Now, because since all of this started to be pushed in schools, we've seen a huge increase in the number of children who suddenly think they belong in the wrong body, which is absolutely devastating for parents who've got children to think that there are children out there who really believe that they were born into the wrong body. And looking at the data released in the CAST review today, it is particularly shocking to see the increase in young girls in particular thinking that they want to be boys. It cannot be a coincidence that this has coincided with Pride Month in schools and all the sex education they're being taught that normalizes trans ideology, that teaches children that you can change sex if you want. This has to stop, and it needs to stop right now. My guests to discuss these two incredibly important issues are Joy Warren, who is National Coordinator for the Fluoride Free Alliance UK, and Lucy Marsh, who's been on the show many times before, who is Communications and Public Relations Officer for the Family Education Trust. If you want to get in touch about any of the topics on the show, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you have something to say on the conclusions of the CAST review, or you want to talk about fluoridation of our water, then head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. There's loads of you over there all chatting about the show. So get yourself over there now and join in. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk, TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to Gemma Cooper, our UK news correspondent. What headlines have you got for me today, Gemma?
Well, really still one of the biggest headlines is the CAST report, 32 recommendations to the NHS and the UK government about the treatment of children and young people who are questioning their gender. It was 4 years in the making, 388 pages. I mean, I know you're going to drill down onto this in the second hour of the show, but it certainly has caused a huge amount of debate across mainstream media today in the UK, amid the fact that her report is very scathing and basically says most of it's based on no evidence whatsoever, puberty-blocking drugs, hormones, therapies where we need to start with young people questioning their gender and looking into their backgrounds, which quite often are full of neglect and abuse. So I know that that's going to be devoted the second hour of the show to that, and I'll very much look forward to
first
hearing
hour.
I thought you said the second part of the first hour. Oh, gosh, James, I can't keep up with you. Second part of the first quarter of this. Anyway, either way, I know you're going to be discussing it in detail, so I look forward to that. Second headline of the day is that following on from a senior Tory backlash, actually, against the European Court of Human Rights, many Tories want us to come out of the European Court of Human Rights. This follows on from the Rwanda immigration bill row, which saw Rishi Sunak saying he would take us out of the ECHR. Now the senior Tories are saying that they're ruling on climate change, saying that every government has a moral duty to protect its citizens from climate change. Tory MPs are saying that the ECHR is going too far into political territory and should butt out, and it's down to each individual government to decide policy on climate change, inverted commas. Following that, though, a poll of many Tory party voters, Conservative Party members have said that they want us to come out of the ECHR as well. So we'll see where that one goes. A powerful animal tranquilizer drug that's already causing a lot of problems in the US has absolutely hit the UK streets, according to experts today. The drug is called xylazine, and it's being mixed with street drugs as dealers seek to increase their market kind of reach and keep costs down. That's been kind of a rumbling around the media debate for some weeks now, and it's one of the headlines today. And also ULEZ, The ultra-low emission zones proposed by Sadiq Khan and rolled out to the Greater London area to some great disdain over the last year. New data out today shows that although Sadiq Khan's bid to reduce traffic congestion and improve air quality with his ultra-low emission zones, new data today shows that actually congestion in London is now the worst ever over the last 5 years. So a bit of a backlash for Sadiq Khan there over you, Les. Many, many of the campaigners against it will be cheering to hear that news.
Yeah, another one against Sadiq Khan. I'm not going to waste my time talking about him. By the way, the reason I was looking to my right, because I was just doing a quick search, because I have had Dr. Caroline Copeland on the Freeman Report before. She's head of the Drug Council in the UK, or one of them, the Home Office's Advisory Council. She's been on before. I am going to try and get her on to talk about this new drug, because it's quite alarming, actually, that this is now on the streets in the UK. Apparently, this is the kind of stuff that can knock out an elephant. So, you know, people should be very, very wary of buying street drugs, I think, that can be contaminated by all this. But we'll talk about that on another show with Caroline. On the ECHR, I think it's well beyond time that we come out of that. I mean, just their comments that, you know, that governments need to be protecting their citizens. They've got no place in saying that as a court. It is, you know, the way democracy is supposed to work is that the people are supposed to decide which issues they think are important. They should be able to discuss them freely. And then through that discussion and debate, public debate, the public then pick the political party they want to govern them. And it is on those principles and those based upon those debates and the conclusions of that, which should decide policy, not some kind of, I mean, it's all just the wrong way around. It's all topsy-turvy that governments should be protecting people from climate change. Absolute load of garbage. It really is.
Well, I think that's half of the Conservative voters in the UK, and that's millions of people, agree with you. A recent poll, quite a partisan poll, I have to say, done for one of the kind of main Tory broadsheet papers, The Telegraph. But yeah, they have voted in their millions to say, yeah, we should leave the ECHR. 49% of people who backed the Tories at the last election want to quit the convention. 35% say they do want to stay, and others have abstained and say they'd rather not comment on that. So, you know, there is widespread, I think, public opinion as well as political opinion to take us out of the ECHR. And of course, Rishi Sunak said he would if the Rwanda bill didn't go his way. So who knows where we'll go with this? Maybe we will see us pulling out, but the ECHR equally seem to be overstepping their mark on a lot of things, wading into jurisdictions or issues that aren't their remit. Almost like a big global think tank, isn't it? Telling countries policies that should be made when it's up to, as you rightly say, the people and the governments of those countries to decide for themselves. So it will be a big deal if we pull out, but if it's the will of the people, especially if the Tory party, well, I can't even say if the Tory party win the next election, because I think we both know that that's not going to be the case. But who knows, the backing from whoever, you know, whichever political party takes over the political landscape, what their voters and their members want to do with the ECHR moving forward. And if the ECHR continue to make sweeping statements about how governments should govern their own countries, then I don't think we've seen the last of this argument at all.
Yeah, exactly. And to those who think that if we come out of that, suddenly we're all going to start, I don't know, raping the countryside and the environment and doing bad things to migrants, what a load of baloney. Because I think, you know, the British public have got pretty good principles and values. In fact, it's the politicians that are stuffing everything up and these global institutions, not the public. I think the public are concerned about environmental issues. They don't necessarily just believe in climate change. This is the thing. Right, Gemma, I'm going to move on because we've got our guests waiting in the waiting room. So, Gemma, I'll speak to you in the next hour. To the rest of you, don't go anywhere because we'll be right back after this short break on TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royt.
Now, Microsoft and OpenAI are also working to build a $100 billion AI supercomputer called Stargate. Whether it will let you, you know, physically go from one realm to another, like in the movie and the TV show Stargate, well, obviously not, but it'll let you go into the AI realm. And this computer system would be 100 times costlier than traditional data centers inside these supercomputers. And reports are saying that Microsoft will be funding a lot of that construction. Pretty soon, AI computing power is going to be a commodity. We are not there yet. It's currently still very expensive. But with all of these developments happening, that's most likely to be the case, certainly by the end of this decade.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-White on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT radio listeners rely on TNT radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Right. Hello. We're back. No guests yet. We've got a few technical issues. We're trying to get Joy Warren on the phone now, I think. We tried to get her via video, but I don't think that's working at the moment. So we're giving her a call now. So Joy, if you're watching, pick up the phone because we want to talk to you. Right. So, yeah. So in this first part of the first hour of today's show, we're going to be talking about fluoride. It's not something I know an awful lot about, but the thought of people putting stuff in the water, you know, chemicals. And my understanding is that fluoride is actually a byproduct of industrial processes. And I think, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that the reason they want to put it in the water is because it's very, very difficult to get rid of, expensive to get rid of. And so it's actually cheaper just to put it in the water. They can get rid of it that way. And they argue, obviously, that it improves dental hygiene. I'm not convinced that I need chemicals being put in my water, my drinking water, to help my teeth. So, yeah, I'm curious to find out more. And I'm hoping we've got Joy on the line now. Hello, Joy.
Oh, hello there. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for joining us, Joy. Obviously, you're the national coordinator for the Fluoride Free Alliance. Joy, I've been thinking, this has occupied me for quite a long time, but this, with so many problems in the world, I haven't really spent a lot of time researching it. Tell me what the current situation is with fluoride in drinking water in the UK.
Right, so we have 6% of the British people who are fluoridated and have been since 1987. That's 10 million people.
Wow, okay.
There is now a drive to fluoridate the northeast in total, and that will add an extra 1.6 million people. The public consultation, which started on the 25th of March, and that lasts until the 17th of June. It appeared in one newspaper online on the 25th, and I think it's in the Sunderland Echo, but we haven't seen it advertised anywhere else. So basically, it was poorly advertised by the Department of Health, and it's really difficult to contact 1.6 million people. I'm sure you can appreciate that.
And what is the argument they're putting? I mean, you know, I guess, first of all, do you think this is a consultation like the Mayor of London puts out, which is basically they kind of got to do it? They don't really want people responding to it because they've already made their minds up that they're going to do it. Do you think we're looking at another example of this kind of government action?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
It's a real scandal.
Yeah, no, of course. Joy, let's talk about what, you know, what's wrong with putting fluoride in the water?
There's nothing right about putting it in the water, and so many things wrong. Even the poor excuse that it reduces dental decay doesn't wash anymore. And we've had two recent research studies from Cumbria, where they found between 2 to 4% of children had less decay. But that's an artifact. Sorry, it's a kind of like a strange thing that fluoride reduces the growth of teeth under the gum, so they erupt later, and therefore when they're examined, they've been in the mouth for less time. So it looks as though decay is reduced, but decay soon catches up. So when you get to 15, the level of decay in 15-year-old fluoridated children is the same as 15-year-old non-fluoridated children. That's the first thing. It's not exactly telling us the truth about dental decay. We've also done our own extrapolation of the statistics. Rather, we've converted them into a spreadsheet, and we can see that there are more extractions in hospital on account of dental decay in fluoridated areas of Northeast than there are in the non-fluoridated areas of Northeast. And this is a rate per 100,000 children. It's very, very obvious when we do the bar chart that the length of the bars are longer in fluoridated Newcastle, Gateshead and North Tyneside as opposed to the rest of Northeast, which isn't fluoridated. Then we have the problem that fluoride is a toxin, which is a general protoplasmic destroyer. I should actually say it's not very good for enzymes. I can actually quote from a Nobel Prize winner, James D. B. Sumner, in 1965, when he said that everyone knows that fluorine and fluorides are very poisonous substances, and we use them in enzyme chemistry to poison enzymes, those vital agents in the body. Now, if it does that to enzymes gradually because of a bioaccumulation of fluoride in the body, it causes chronic illness. And that chronic illness occurs by according to an individual's susceptibilities to illness. So it's a whole range of illnesses which are caused, but I'll just quote three here, and that's bone fracture, including hip fractures, diabetes 2, hyperthyroidism. But the worst thing that's happening now, we've discovered it recently in America, and there are about 52 out of 55 research studies which have been confirmed by the American government's National Toxicology Program, where it shows that the IQ of the unborn child, the fetus, and the infant is reduced because of being exposed to fluoride when in the womb and when in baby formula made up with fluoridated water. The resultant reduction in IQ is 5 to 6 IQ points, which is not insignificant. And if that happens to a whole population, such as the Northeast, then you have less geniuses and more children who are ESN, who have special educational needs. And this is a big scandal.
Now, Joy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is a huge scandal, isn't it? I mean, look, my son is taking his GCSEs at the moment, and he was doing some homework the other day, and part of his revision, he was learning about fluoride in the water, and, you know, he was kind of being taught about the pluses and minuses of it. But there were, you know, even him, he was being taught that it's not a good thing. It causes cancer, it causes all sorts of problems. Why do you think then, given that the evidence, you know, because the people in government, they're not stupid, the people in the Department for Health and whatever, you know, if there's only scant evidence for the positive things about fluoride, if there are any at all, but even, you know, if the evidence is, like you said, is pretty shockingly poor, if at all, any evidence for it, why do you think they want to do it? I mean, where does fluoride come from?
All right. Why do I think they want to do it? It's to do with industry making money for their shareholders and for not having to spend money to neutralize the poison before it's buried forever, as it were. That's very expensive to neutralize hexafluorosilicic acid, which is the agent for adding fluoride in the drinking water. It's not only that, but I think it's a game. It's a power game. Possibly, you know, we have to look at the establishment. It's very, very high up civil servants who want to rule the ministers, as it were. They feed the ministers wrong, duff information. And the ministers can't say, I don't believe you, because if you have an advisor, they're paid to give you good advice and you listen, in most cases. Right, so where did it come from? It comes from the phosphate fertilizer manufacturing industry. And phosphate fertilizer is vital these days to add to our fields to give us year-round crops. We don't lay a field fallow anymore. We just keep adding the phosphate and then keep adding the crops. And phosphate is a very, very lucrative business. It's so many people are employed in it, in the industry, and it's worldwide. You know, the phosphate fertilizer is made worldwide. Although in America, I think they have a 30% share of the market. And that's where it came from in the first place. They started putting in sodium fluoride into drinking water in America in the 1950s. But they moved to hexafluorosilicic acid because sodium fluoride was running out, as it were. It comes from an ore, that's O-R-E, which is crushed with sulfuric acid to extract the phosphate, and they have wastes, and the wastes are converted into hydrofluorosilicic acid and added to either large ponds lying around the perimeter of these phosphate fertilizer manufactories, or they're stuck straight away into large load tankers, which are then shipped to other countries, or to, in America's case, of course, to about 70% of the population of North America.
Sorry if I can interrupt. We're going to have to go to the break in a second. And when we come back, I want to talk about what can we do about this? Because, you know, I've been thinking about whether I need to buy filtration systems or whatever. But before we go to the break, these industrial, you know, manufacturers that produce this chemical, that's what I thought, that it was a byproduct of making other stuff. Do they then sell this to the government to put in our water? Are they making, as well as saving money from not having to neutralize it and dispose of it, are they actually making money from selling it as well?
Yes, indeed they are. Absolutely. And it's right. Very, very good, because obviously they're getting rid of a huge headache of they can't neutralize it. Well, they could, but they'd have to spend more money than they get
right.
from selling it.
So there's, like so that, that's, yeah. And the reason I wanted to ask that question is because there's your incentive and why this is happening, even though there is no evidence actually that fluoride is a beneficial thing for human health. Joy, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, I'd like to discuss, you know, is there anything I can do in my home? I don't really want to buy plastic bottles with water in. We used to do that a lot. We've now got a soda stream because I do have a fetish for fizzy water. But we do that at home now because we were just filling up wheelie bins full of plastic, which I don't want to do. But is there anything, we'll discuss this after the break, is there anything that I can do at home to take the fluoride out of the water if it's there? So don't go anywhere, Joy, stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
Have you heard the news?
The news, the news.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is the news.
This is Jason Olborn with your news headlines. The Turkish government has imposed export restrictions on Israel, covering 54 product categories in response to the Gaza war. More than 100 people have died on a capsized ferry escaping a cholera outbreak off Mozambique. A CIA and former FBI official has admitted in an undercover recording that the FBI can jail anyone. Gold and silver prices continue to enthrall investors, with gold breaking another peak at US $2,356.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Right. Now, Joy, you've confirmed what I thought was the case. As I said, I don't have loads of knowledge about this, but it's really interesting what you told me. And it does confirm what I thought was going on. The thing I'm not clear about, I've done a little bit of research looking at, you know, what I could do in the home to take out fluoride out of the water. And what I've seen so far seems to be quite expensive. What solutions are available to those people who are worried about this and want to filter their water?
Okay, there's three ways of doing it. Reverse osmosis, which can be under the sink or countertop. Then you can have distillation, which is a dirty great big kettle, which does take electricity. And the third one, I think, is the best one, is for anybody on the move, is a zero water filter jug. Now, it's in counterintuitive for me to actually recommend that, because most water filter jugs don't do the job. They say they do, but when you analyze the fluoride content, it's either increased, if that's possible. Yes, it can. That can happen. Or it can reduce only slightly. So those are the three methods. And yes, reverse osmosis costs about £100. The distillation unit costs £100. And the zero water butt jug costs anything from about £20 upwards. But all three have to have filters in them, replaced every now and then. I mean, the distillation is less expensive because you put a small carbon filter in the spout, and that lasts some time and it's not so expensive. But the reverse osmosis has to be replaced about every 6 months, which costs about, I think, £50, £50, £60. And the zero filter has to be replaced even more frequently. But it at least it gives you confidence that your water is absolutely pure.
The ones I've been looking at are, like you said, they're like almost like a big kettle. Some of them are quite expensive. I think there's one, I forget which specific device, it's about £250. But this is why I didn't rush into the purchase, because, you know, if you're looking at the filters every 6 months as well, you're talking, it's quite a big investment. I guess my next question to you, Joy, is, I mean, I live in South Wales. Do you know what the situation is in South Wales in the UK?
You're fine. South Wales, I think. Are you on the Gower Coast or Cardiff area?
I'm closer to Cardiff than I am Gower.
Yeah. It all depends. If your water's soft, the soft water's really not so good for you, so you do need to sort of consider that. But there's no fluoride in Welsh water at all. There is a little bit of natural fluoride in the border, in the Welsh Marches area, but nothing to worry about in Cardiff.
That's very, very good to hear. Thank you. So I don't actually need to worry at the moment. And Joy, well, finally, what are you... Sorry, go on.
Well, you might want to worry about the plastic nanoparticles, which you can remove with distillation and with RO and with zero water.
Maybe I do need to think about that. I better put my research hat on later today and do some more research and look at which products to get. Joy, finally, what are you doing as an organisation to try and, presumably you're trying to raise awareness, that's why you're on the show today. What else are you doing in the Northeast at the moment to try and wake people up and tell them they need to respond to this consultation?
Because it's impossible to respond if you don't know it exists. And as far as we know, 1.6 million people are legless, as far as this is concerned. So our plan is to distribute a flyer to selected postcodes. And that'll be done by Royal Mail soon. I'm just basically putting myself out there as much as I can. We're contacting all civil society organizations gradually to ask them to contact their members. And we've got a website page which went up last week, which is on our Northeast Water Fluoridation Concerns website. Can I give you the URL?
Yes, please. Yes, yes, yes.
N for Nora, E W, F for Freddy, C.
Yes, please. Yes, yes, yes.
N for Nora, E W, F for Freddy, C .org.uk. Now it's a page which you can reach from a tab called consultation, and that goes into giving you a full chapter and verse about the consultation questionnaire, our interpretation of the questionnaire, the legal framework around the consultation, our interpretation of the legal framework. Lots of hints, lots of ideas on how to object and what to object about, because it's important. The questionnaire by the department wants us to concentrate on health, ethics, one other, but also we have to give our own, how can I say, opinion backed up by references to the research literature. So we have to be cogent. That's written into the law. We cannot just say, I don't want to be fluoridated. Right? You have to say, I don't want to be fluoridated because, and this is my justification. Now, this is asking an awful lot of people who are not used to going through reams and reams of information. So we've provided them with the references. So hopefully they all pick up on those, and we emphasize as much as we can that references have to be supplied to the Department of Health. Because what happened was, on 27th of March, it was a press release only in two newspapers in the Northeast. And then at the same time, National Health staff in the Northeast were notified by their managers. Now, we expect the NHS staff to be asked to prove fluoridation. So it's not a level playing field.
Yeah, Joy, listen, I'll tell you what, if you can message that to one of my producers, I will post that on X. And please do come back on the Freeman Report. Hopefully we'll get you on video next time and a better line, because the line wasn't very good. So apologies about that. But we will get you back on. I do think this is an incredibly important topic. And I'm totally with you. I think we need to wake up people in the Northeast to the fact that there is this consultation to give them the opportunity to say whether they do want fluoride or not in the water. So thank you very much, Joy Warren. Right, okay, we're going to take a quick short break now, and when we come back, I'll be welcoming back Lucy Marsh from the Family Education Trust. We're going to be talking about the CAS review, which was published today. So don't go anywhere. Stay with me, James Freeman, on TNT.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. Prediabetes does. 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, but with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. And you can change the outcome. Take the 1 minute prediabetes risk test today. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org.
This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. Well, really important topic next, particularly for me and other parents up and down the UK. We're talking about gender services for young people and children. And I'm delighted to be welcoming back Lucy Marsh, who is Communications and Public Relations Officer for the Family Education Trust. Welcome back to the show, Lucy.
Thank you, James. Nice to be here.
Yes, and it's good news, isn't it? I think it is. It does seem to be now that the debate in the UK on gender services for children and young people seems to be going in the right direction. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. It's a really big step today in the right direction, because Dr. Cass has outlined the fact that she said it's a very shaky foundation, what's been going on with children with gender services in England with the NHS, and because there is a total lack of evidence that any of the medical interventions that have been happening with puberty blockers, which inevitably lead to cross-sex hormones, that there isn't the evidence that they're actually beneficial. In fact, I've been reading through the report today, and there is a section in the report that says that adults who identify as trans, who had transitioned as adolescents, are actually at a greater risk of suicide than those who didn't transition as children. So obviously, this information is pointing to the fact that puberty blockers, as well as not just being beneficial, are actually harmful, which we've known for a long time, but it's actually really good to get it out there into the public arena.
I find this fascinating and shocking at the same time, Lucy, because to me, it just kind of seems obvious, really. It seems like common sense. Do not interfere with the body's development, natural development systems. I mean, to me, that just seems totally obvious. I don't need to go out and do a review for 4 years to kind of come up to that conclusions, but we are where we are. This review is out now. Do you think, though, because this review today is only about the services, it's really about the NHS, isn't it? It was actually put into place, this review, by the NHS to work out how it should support young people and children. What it doesn't do is talk about what's going on in schools in terms of sex education, in terms of the celebration of Pride Month and all these kind of things, which kind of normalise trans ideology. Because when you look at some of the numbers from the report, it's clear that we've seen a huge growth in recent years, just at the time when schools have been discussing this and kind of normalising it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, what we have some concerns about the report because what isn't addressed is what's known as rapid onset gender dysphoria, which is especially with teenage girls sort of 13, 14, who, having shown no concern about their sex bodies prepubescent, they suddenly come up with the idea that they think that they're a boy. That's the most common scenario at the moment. And that isn't addressed in the report. This is the thing that we're mainly seeing in schools, is young girls suddenly deciding, as if from nowhere, that they think that they're born in the wrong body. And a lot of this is coming from social contagion. So a lot of it is from social media. And a lot of it, unfortunately, is coming from what they're being taught in schools, because so many schools teach children that it's possible to be born in the wrong body. There's some teachers who are just complete activists in this area. And also, it's completely unregulated third-party relationship and sex education organisations who are coming into schools who are teaching this nonsense to children. And then teachers are still socially transitioning them. There was one in the news just a few days ago of a parent who discovered that school had been referring to her daughter as a boy only when she went to parents' evening, and they were referring to her daughter as he, him. And it's still happening. And unfortunately, these activist groups, despite the government review saying that the advice was for schools not to socially transition them, a lot of activist teachers and indeed the National Education Union in this country have been saying they're going to ignore it. So it's not enough just for the CAT review to come out and talk about the NHS. We now need firm action on schools.
Why do you think it is that, and I know, I've read some stuff on this, but, I had Bill Bull Chris on the show last week, and he says that this is not just in the UK, this is in the States, in Canada, lots of other countries. There is a particular thing with young girls being sort of infected or affected by being exposed to this ideology. Why is it? Why is it affecting girls more than it is boys?
Well, this has partly also been raised by Dr. Cass in the review, because she talked about the impact of early exposure to pornography, and that sort of touched upon in the report. And I think that's a massive factor, because a lot of girls as well as boys are being exposed to pornography, and they're seeing these horrific acts that are being basically implied that they're normal, like strangulation, horrific things. And also this is also being taught in schools as normal. And I think a lot of girls look at that and they think that they've got to be the sort of pornographic version of a woman, and it terrifies them. That's horrifying them. And my own youngest daughter's 13, and she's horrified by even being taught about sex education at school. Doesn't want to talk about it. She finds it disgusting. Imagine being a girl and that's presented to you as this is what you'll be as a woman. Why wouldn't you want to identify as a boy to get out of it, or as non-binary?
Yeah, and do you think, because we've heard also a lot about social media and particularly like Instagram with girls, it does TikTok. Seem to be that girls, I mean, look, boys, I think boys have got their own problems, don't get me wrong, but I think girls are more kind of self-aware of their bodies, their image. It does seem to be something about being a young girl that they go through at that age, that particular age. How much of an influence do you think social media is as well?
I think it's a huge influence. There has been some research done. An American guy who works in this area called Jonathan Haidt, and he's particularly looked at the effects of social media on girls, on their levels of anxiety, mental health, depression, and it skyrockets, particularly with the use of Instagram. I know you mentioned that. Between the ages of about 12 and 14, it is crucial. And also TikTok as well, that is having a massive influence on them. And they're just not ready. The girls are not ready, and boys at that age, to be influenced by social media, because they're struggling at that age to distinguish between what is fantasy and what is reality. And a lot of what's Instagram is fantasy. You know, the people portray a particular version of their lives, and young kids think that that's real. I mean, even as an adult going on social media, it's difficult. Sometimes you think, oh, why isn't my life as good as that person's? And as an adult, it can be a really negative influence. So imagine that on a 12, 13, 14 year old girl.
Yeah. And especially everybody who, you know, I mean, I put my hand up. I do use TikTok, like most other people. And you know, there's this whole thing with filters, isn't it? And you know, a lot of the photos that young girls are seeing of other girls, they're not real. They're not real. Yeah. They're using these filters, which, I think adds to that, because then they go and look in the mirror and they think, well, I'm not that good. I can't compete with that. Do you think that, because look, Lucy, I've got, my daughter is 11. She's kind of on the edge of all this stuff. It's very, very difficult as a parent, I think. It's all very well saying, well, just don't give them any access to the internet, you know, or don't allow them on. But, you know, as a parent, that's very, very difficult. And I'm not convinced that that's being realistic, because what will happen then, and, you know, my daughter has only just got a proper phone, is they get left out of everything, because all their friends, I mean, all of her friends have had smartphones for 2-3 years, some of them. My daughter hasn't, but she was getting left out because they're all, you know, communicating after school. Do you think it's possible to sort of help guide young people through this by talking to them? Or do you just think that it's so damaging that we should just ban it, even if it is difficult?
That's a really good question. And it's a really tricky situation, because in an ideal world, yes, a ban on social media for under 16s would be great, a ban on smartphones. But in reality, I don't think that that's going to happen. And I think the most important thing is that parents need to be aware of what's going on. So my youngest daughter, she does have a phone, but I'm really strict on what she's allowed to have and not have. So she's not allowed to have TikTok. She's not allowed to have Snapchat. Yeah. And I have parental approvals on things. So she's not allowed to add people without, in certain situations, because she does have WhatsApp, because that's how all of her friends communicate. So I do keep an eye on it. I mean, it's difficult not to be the police as well, because they need to have a degree of privacy. However, but I talk to her a lot. I have to say, as a parent, one of the best avenues for actually talking to your children about this is in the car when you're driving them to and fro to places, because you're side on side. You're not sort of so confrontational that you're looking at them face to face, because teenagers don't like that. And actually, when you're in the car, you've got their undivided attention, and actually you can talk about these things. So I do bang on to them about these things, and some of it goes in. I think it's just really important that you keep the communication open, and you do chat to them when they're open to having a conversation, to make sure they know about the dangers the difference between fantasy and reality. So I think really, as a parent, the most important thing is to be there, to be present. And it's difficult when we're all working and you're tired and you don't feel like having a chat about things. I think it's important that you make that time to talk to their children and your children and ask if they've got any concerns about this stuff.
Yeah, and of course, what we're talking about here is actually just the internet. I'm actually very, very just as concerned, because, I mean, you know, like you, my daughter is not allowed TikTok. She gets very, very frustrated. She thinks it's because of privacy issues. And she says, you know, I'll do a dance, I won't show my face. I'll say, no, it's got nothing to do with that. It's addictive. And you're not old enough to, you know, because we nearly flooded the downstairs of our last house because me and my wife were sat there. We ran the bath, and both on TikTok, there was this big flood of water that was coming through the kitchen. So, you know, if that's happening to us, then the kids are definitely not ready for it. Now, as I said, that's one thing, the internet, but this is stuff is being normalized in schools. What is going on with that? You know, obviously we've had this review, which is about children's services within the NHS. Is there any kind of review or any debate within government or any kind of research for policy? What's going on in terms of this area in schools?
Well, obviously we've had the government have released their draft guidelines on dealing with gender questioning children in schools, and they've come out with their advice, which was in general not to socially transition children and definitely not to do it without the consent and the knowledge of the parents. We don't think that goes far enough, because we think that leaves loopholes for deluded parents that have their own issues that are putting them onto their children and want to transition their children. That leaves room for them to do that. It also leaves room for teachers who have an agenda, who want to indoctrinate children. And unfortunately, there are more of those than you would think, because a lot of them have come out on social media saying that they're going to ignore it. A lot of the RSE organisations have been saying ignore it. Even some of our biggest teaching unions are saying ignore it, because they think it's supportive to transition children. As far as the review of inappropriate sex education materials, that still hasn't materialised. We still haven't seen the final report on that. So I'm not really sure what's going on with that. But we really strongly feel that the guidance is pointless unless there are clear legal consequences for schools that carry on and ignore the guidance. Because if there's no teeth in it, then why would an activist teacher that's determined to transition children, they just ignore it if there's no consequences? So, and we feel that if the law needs to be changed to do so, it needs to be changed.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there is all this celebration of like Pride Month and all of that. And look, you know, I'm not, we had, you know, lots of problems in the UK. It was actually against the law to be gay. I think that was wrong. I think it's right what we've done. We've liberalised some people that clearly are gay. I don't think that's a lifestyle choice or whatever. I think we've done the right thing. But this whole thing where we've kind of then grouped together, and it keep, you know, the letters of the alphabet keep on getting added to this whole group. You know, they don't belong together, I think. And also, you know, I don't think we need to be teaching and celebrating this in schools in order to stop people being I don't know, discriminatory against. And you know, tolerance is a virtue in itself and can be taught about, you know, being kind to other people and treating them how you want to be treated. I don't think that we need to sort of talk about that within sexuality to teach children to be tolerant. What do you think?
No, absolutely. We talk a lot about the Equality Act in this country, and unfortunately, in terms of the protected characteristics, it seems that the LGBT and transgender tops everything else in terms of what is taught in schools. You see the pride flag everywhere, and some schools have been told off for even flying the Union Jack, and you're not allowed to be patriotic, but you are allowed to fly the pride flag, which seems insane. But really, we don't need to be, especially in primary schools, we don't need to be teaching children about any of this. We don't need to be celebrating pride. We don't need to be teaching them about all these alternative lifestyles, because it's sexualizing children when they're too young to understand what sexuality is. And we've heard it a lot, is that especially young girls, again, they get confused between what's a friendship and what's a romantic relationship. So, you know, they find that they don't like boys before they start senior school. And so, and they're being told, well, actually, you're
well, that's gay, normal. You're bi.
Exactly. That's normal. It's completely normal. Yeah. Or I've even heard of children of 10 or 11 being told that they're asexual because they're not attracted to anyone. And that is sexualizing children. We just need to leave them alone to grow up. I mean, some children are not even certain about their sexuality until they're 17, 18, 19 even. And we heard today in the Cash Review that Hilary Cass is saying that adolescents, their brain doesn't mature until they're 25, which is really good. I'm so glad that she said that, because 16 and 17-year-olds within the NHS are being shoved into adult services, gender services, where they're just affirmed. And I think it's really important to actually distinguish this fact that actually even up to 25, your brain is not cemented in the personality that you're going to be. You're still forming new neural pathways, and if you think that even at that age you're not concrete in your opinions about things, imagine teaching that to a child in primary school. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Lucy, have you ever thought of going into politics? I think you'd make a great politician. You're the kind of politician that I want to see in this country talking sense. I'm jesting, obviously. But do tell us, what is the Family Education Trust doing at the moment on this front?
We have, we continue to contribute to debate. We continue to work with the government and with MPs and try to basically, we try to give them the research and show them the evidence in order to make the correct decisions and to make policies. So we have, we've got some new research coming out this year. We've got one on toxic masculinity, which is one thing that if the Labour government were to get in at the next election, they want to put toxic masculinity on the curriculum, teach all boys about toxic masculinity, which, again, it's something that is just not going to be, it's not going to be a good thing. It's not going to be good for relationships between the sexes, not going to be good for boys. So we've got a report coming out on that. We're doing one on Drag Queen Story Hour, and we've got another one coming up on safeguarding within the church. So got a few research reports coming out. So we're, yes, continuing to work away there and hopefully provide the evidence, help politicians make good common sense decisions.
Fantastic. Keep on doing it, Lucy. Keep on going. Where's your website for people that want to go and find more information?
We are familyeducationtrust.org.uk. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. So yeah, look us up. It's Fam Ed Trust on Twitter. And yes, and we have a new website coming, so that will be coming soon. So yeah, lots happening.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Lucy Marsh, thank you so much for coming on the Freeman Report and for all the great work you're doing. Please do come back on again to tell us when you have updates on some of that work you were talking about. Lucy Marsh, ladies and gentlemen. Right. OK, we're going to take a short break now, but don't go anywhere because we've got the second hour of the show right here on TNT.